listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining me today, the Joy Taylor Show. Still a beautiful day here in Los Angeles, but it's finally cooled down a little bit. We got rain today, and in LA, that is basically the apocalypse. It never rains in Southern California. The song is true. Thanks for hanging with us today. It's a fun college slate of games. David Gascon just got you updated on the scores. So we'll pay close attention to that Oklahoma game because that could get really interesting pretty quickly. They're struggling offensively. They are down 10-7 to Kansas right now, are the Sooners. And that was a big conversation last week with Williams and Rattler and who's going to run that offense. So we'll keep you updated on that. Michigan just scored. Blake Corum. So they are now up 16-7 on Northwestern. We'll keep you updated with all the college football scores throughout the day. We have a fun show today. A lot going on. As my bro, LeVar Arrington, just mentioned, there's some meat on the bones in some of these stories today. And I am personally invested because I have put blood, sweat, and tears into the Miami Dolphins organization over the years. And I am displeased with how things are being handled right now. And it's a very, very complicated situation. We'll talk a little basketball today. Lakers struggling a little bit. I'm not panicking. It is two games, and I anticipated a little bit of a development process with this new squad, a lot of new faces. This is how it goes when LeBron brings in a bunch of new guys. But we will talk to Siret Sohi from The Ringer. And we also talked to Amy Dash. She is a legal insider for CBS Sports, Fox Sports, and Odyssey. And I have lots of questions about the Deshaun Watson situation to ask her. And she's been great. If you follow her on Twitter at Amy Dash TV, she keeps everyone updated on all the legal things that are going on around the leagues. And Kimmy Checks of NFL Network. We have week 7 in the NFL, which started with that Browns-Broncos game on Thursday night, which was a pretty pivotal game for both of those organizations. Obviously, we weren't expecting a shootout, which we did not get, but a lot of interesting learns from that game, particularly from the Cleveland Browns with their offensive line in the running game. And shout out to D'Ernest Johnson, which is an incredible story, and he had an unbelievable night. Breakout game for him, which the Browns really needed considering everyone was injured and most importantly, Baker. So we'll get you updated on everything that's happening with that. I have some thoughts on what the Browns should do about Baker because that conversation has kind of been brewing for about a year now, and it's starting to bubble, starting to heat up. If you're a stew maker, things are starting to get a little hot with the Baker conversation and whether they should extend him and what they should do with him and what his ceiling is and all of these things. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, so I have watched the Browns suffer for decades, basically my entire life. And I do not think they should panic when it comes to Baker, but we'll talk a little bit about that later. Should we get to, hello, Iowa Sam and Ryan. You might hear from them as well.
Hello, Joy.
We heard from David Gascon at the top of the show with the updates, so you'll hear from the guys throughout the show, but should we get to my favorite five? We finally found a name. Favorite five. Let's do it. All right, so it's week 7 in the NFL, and there are a lot of predicted blowouts this weekend. Some of the spreads on these games have gotten absolutely absurd, particularly the Bears-Bucks, the Cardinals, Texans, and the Rams and Lions. I want to look up on Fox Bet right now what the spreads have gotten to. But at least three of the games are well over a touchdown favorites. So let's see. Okay, so the Packers are now 8-point favorites over the Washington football team. The Rams are favored by 16 against the Lions. Cardinals has reached 18. And Tampa's come down a little bit. Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski are not playing as of right now. So that, I mean, they have a million weapons, but that could be something. So that's come down. I think it was 12 and a half yesterday, Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Chicago Bears. But here are my, these are not my picks. These are just the games that I am the most excited to watch tomorrow. And then I will give you my picks, my two dimes at the end of it. But let's start with the Chiefs-Titans, which I think is the best game of the slate tomorrow. The Chiefs got a win last week, which they, weirdly to say, desperately needed. They struggled in the first half against Washington and then decided, oh, we're done playing around. And the offense got kicking and the defense did a good job. And let's see what they can do against the Titans. Their run defense is not spectacular, the Chiefs. And Derrick Henry is on a tear around the league. He is my favorite running back in the league. Might be my favorite player to watch in the league. But he, aside from my personal entertainment, he's also crushing and on record pace this year. And if he gets going, that could be a major problem for the Chiefs. It is in Tennessee tomorrow in the early games, and that is a big one to watch. The Chiefs are favored by 4, which is really I want to take the Titans there, but I also think I just kind of want to enjoy this game. So I don't know how that's going to go. Again, Derrick Henry's unbelievable, and the Chiefs' defense has been struggling this year, but I'm just going to enjoy that one. Bengals-Ravens. All right, so this is an AFC North matchup between the two best teams right now in that division. It's at Baltimore. I love Joe Burrow. I love what the Bengals are building. Again, I think that the Ravens are going to take this game. The Ravens are favored by 6.5, so Vegas doesn't think it's going to be close. I don't know that I agree with that. This may or may not be one of my dimes. We're not going to get to it yet, but I think it's going to be a close game. I'm going to say that the Ravens win, but we'll get to the picks a little bit later. Bears-Bucks is interesting. Of course, I'm way invested in this Justin Fields story, but with the injuries that the Buccaneers have now, I think this could be an interesting game because the Bears do have a good defense. And I believe now this is the largest gap in age in quarterback history between Justin Fields and Tom Brady. I think Mac Jones held it originally, and now this is the biggest one. So this is what Tom's going to do. He's just going to keep setting records for how much older he is, the quarterbacks that he plays. But I'm way invested in the Justin Fields story, and I think that will be an interesting game. Eagles-Raiders is a yummy game this weekend. The Raiders have dealt with a whole lot this season.
Yummy!
They had a nice win last week against the Broncos, who are just awful. I mean, man. Now listen, to be fair to me, I saw this coming. I like Teddy Bridgewater a lot, but what I like and what actually works are two different things, and I can separate the two. Colin was very high. Watch the Herd weekdays, noon to 3 on FS1. Colin was very high on the Broncos early, and I told him, you're getting ahead of yourself. They haven't beaten anyone. And it has proved to be true. They have taken L's repeatedly.
Their offense is excruciating to watch.
Excruciating. Lately. Excruciating. I don't know what I would rather do less than deal with the Broncos offense. It was so atrocious. They got a little bit going in the second half on Thursday night. A little bit. They made it interesting, which I appreciate. But the first half was just awful. I think they had 65 yards of total offense. It was abysmal. So yeah, the Broncos, not good, but that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the Raiders and the Eagles. I think that's a very interesting game tomorrow. And then Colts-Niners. So the Niners cannot get healthy at the quarterback position. Jimmy G is expected to play. The Colts have struggled with injuries all season long as well. This is a very important game for the Colts. And interestingly enough for the Colts, I don't get too much into look-ahead games in the NFL, but the Colts play the Titans next week. And if they lose that game, they're pretty much out of the playoffs. So they really need to put together a string of good performances. And again, the Niners are just ravaged with injuries. It seems like the story for everyone right now. So how Jimmy G comes back and performs is going to be interesting to me as well. So Chiefs, Titans, Bengals, Ravens, Bears, Bucks, Eagles, Raiders, Colts, Niners are my favorite five for tomorrow. And now time for my two dimes. As I mentioned, with a little tease, I like Cincinnati plus 6.5. Cincinnati's been playing really well. Their offense is rolling. I obviously, the Raiders are dominant. Lamar Jackson is unbelievable. But 6.5 is a lot of points, especially for a divisional game as well. So I'm going to take Cincinnati plus 6.5, and I'm going to take the Niners minus 4. I think that that is, yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going Niners minus 4 and over the Colts, and Cincinnati plus 6.5. So those are my favorite five and my two dimes. We'll keep you updated with the college football games throughout the day. It looks like Kansas just scored again. What is the deal with the Sooners this year? Unbelievable. All right. So Kansas is now up 16-7 with a minute 30 left in the third quarter. Neal just had a touchdown, and we'll keep you updated with that. But it's getting wild there. This is a really interesting development for the Sooners. And the extra point is good. So they are up now 17-7. Kansas is over Oklahoma. We'll talk to Kimmy Checks of NFL Network at the bottom of the hour, talk about some of these games coming up. Week 7 in the NFL, some of the ones that I just discussed. She is from Kansas City, so I want to get her thoughts on what's going on with the Chiefs this year and how important that Chiefs-Titans game is, which, as I mentioned, I think is the biggest game of this weekend. But coming up next, we got to do it. The Dolphins, Deshaun Watson. It's a dumpster fire in Miami, and I can't even believe this is an actual conversation for a possible trade. We'll discuss that next on the Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back. Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Beautiful Saturday afternoon. Appreciate you hanging with us. Michigan up 17-7 on Northwestern. And that is the same score for the Kansas-Oklahoma game, only Kansas is winning right now.
Shocking.
It is kind of crazy.
Kansas, I like it, though, is really bad.
I like it, though. So, yeah, Kansas 1-5. Yeah, they should not be winning this game. Oklahoma is driving, though. So let's see what they do here. And they score. So there you go. Right on cue. Oklahoma gets in the end zone. And they are...
Where's that offense from the Texas game?
Yeah.
The Sooners, right?
I don't know. Maybe they play down to their competition. Is that yeah, what's happening?
But I mean, Kansas has been historically bad the last 10 years.
They're bad now. They're 1-5. Jeremiah Hall with the touchdown. So the Sooners, pending the extra point, will be down 17-14 to Kansas. We'll talk to Kimmy Checks at the bottom of the hour, get some thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs-Titans game, which I think is the biggest matchup of the weekend. And of course, we'll keep you updated on all the college football games throughout the day. So I teased before the break talking about Deshaun Watson, and the situation with Tua and Deshaun Watson in Miami is... I don't know that I have the appropriate word to describe how I feel about it, but I'll break it down this way. And we'll talk to Amy Dash later in the show. She's a legal insider for Fox Sports, and get the actual information on what's happening with all the cases and what it all means. But it's a pretty unbelievable timeline what Tua has had to endure in Miami. So there's really two sides of it. This is the Tua side, and then there's the Deshaun Watson side. So let's start with the Tua side. The Tua side, to me, has been handled absolutely terribly. You drafted Tua, you had the whole tank for Tua, you bring him in, and he is supposed to be the future of your franchise. He's a great kid. He has all the qualities that you would want in a franchise quarterback. Now, me personally, I don't feel comfortable drafting quarterbacks who have had multiple major injuries in college. That's not what I would do as an NFL GM. But they took a chance on him with the injuries, and I bought in, and so did all of that fan base. Like, Tua is the guy. It's exciting. You finally have the opportunity to draft your future quarterback. Here he is. Great. And we're going with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, the conversation about when rookie quarterbacks should start, obviously, I think everyone knows how I feel about it right now. Start them right away. I don't want to hear this conversation about protecting them and easing them in. If it's a situation like the Niners where you are a Super Bowl contending roster and you have Jimmy G on your roster and Trey Lance has played in one football game in over a year, okay, that's an outlier situation. But generally, when you're drafting your future quarterback, you are not in a situation to win a Super Bowl right now, and that is the Miami Dolphins, which is evident in the fact that they didn't make the playoffs last year. So they have Ryan Fitzpatrick in house, and everyone's trying to do this Patrick Mahomes, Alex Smith situation, which look, they've talked about ad nauseum how amazing it was that Patrick Mahomes had that luxury in Alex Smith. They've also talked about how he clearly could have played right away as well. Also, he's Patrick Mahomes. He's really, really, really great. So maybe stop comparing all of these young quarterbacks to that guy. Josh Allen did not look like Patrick Mahomes right away. He didn't look like it his second year. And now Josh Allen is an MVP contention and is without question the future of that franchise. So it took him a little longer. Is he any less talented right now or capable than Patrick Mahomes? No. So the path for the first 3 years for these quarterbacks does not have to be the same. Everyone doesn't have to come in and win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Joe Burrow got injured last year. He's still the future of the Cincinnati Bengals. So I say all that to say this. Tua should have started week one last year. If he wasn't healthy, you shouldn't have drafted him. Period. So if you're telling me he wasn't ready to play because he wasn't completely healed, why did you draft him? So that was the first mistake. So it's, assuming he was healthy, he's not ready. Okay, it doesn't matter if he's ready or not. You guys are not winning a championship this year. You are losing valuable development time, valuable snaps, giving them to Ryan Fitzpatrick, who at the time was on his eighth team. For what? So that you could make, you didn't make the playoffs. So what did you do? You had a couple competitive games, and then you, when you did finally turn it over to Tua, you pulled him in big moments because he was struggling to give it to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Again, for nothing. Because you did not make the playoffs. It's not like you were building towards something. It's not like you had an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. So all you did was steal development time from Tua. So now at the end of the season, you don't know what Tua is. Now the fan base is bought in, but the reality is we had no idea what Tua was. And the Dolphins couldn't have made an evaluation on him because of the way that they handled his rookie year. So then what happens next? You move into the beginning of this year. All we can hear about is how Tua is the future. Tua is the future. Tua is the future. And now Deshaun Watson says he wants out and it's a possibility that he could come to Miami. This is before the cases, before the accusations have come out. What are you talking about? No, he's the guy. Did you trade him? You drafted him. You're moving forward with the organization with Tua. And now all of a sudden Deshaun Watson's in the picture? I thought we were getting married. Who is this girl? I don't understand. Like it blows my mind that ever even happened. So that's the first like dent in the situation. That was the first thing that pierced any kind of confidence in Tua being the future of that organization. Then the allegations come, right? So all that gets put to rest and we're hearing more things and we're finding out about the cases and we're finding out about the suits and everything's happening. It's whirlwinds around Deshaun Watson. And you have Houston dealing with him. He's not playing. He's asked for a trade. He doesn't want to play for Houston anymore. Houston's trying to trade him. Nobody knows what's going on. And now here we are in the middle of the season with Tua dealing with another injury. The team is awful. And everything that you quote unquote built from last year is completely falling apart. I don't understand how, as an organization, you are having a real conversation at this point with the information that we all have about Deshaun Watson and the situation, which is essentially nothing. We know about the suits. We know about the criminal investigation. We don't know anything about whether he's going to be available to play. We don't know how this is all going to play out. You have complete unknowns and you're willing to trade the farm, bail on Tua, essentially saying, not only did you mess up last year's draft, you messed up this year's draft too, because you had an opportunity to draft another quarterback and not even have a conversation about the drama surrounding Deshaun Watson. You could add Trey Lance, Justin Fields, or Mac Jones. And now you're talking about trading everyone and players to get Deshaun Watson, who, best case scenario, for Deshaun, has terrible judgment. Worst case scenario, he never plays in the NFL again. And I am supposed to take this situation seriously? I'm supposed to look at this like, yeah, this is like war room stuff. We're figuring it out. You are literally making no sense. It is such a massive risk to bring in Deshaun Watson at this point. That's not my opinion. My opinion in this situation actually doesn't matter. That's just my personal opinion I have not even shared yet publicly. It doesn't matter. We don't know. No one knows. Is the NFL going to suspend him? Is he going to be available for a year? If you make the trade for all these picks, are there protections? because you don't have a quarterback now. So essentially you're planning for 2 years from now. So you're telling me as a Dolphin, like you're a Dolphins fan, you're telling me now I have to wait 4 years to figure out what's going on with the quarterback position? And again, I'm just sitting here, me, Joy Taylor. I'm supposed to just like absorb this as if this is a plan. Make it make sense. That's all I ask from everyone every single day. Make it make sense to me. Because the thing is, you don't even know what Tua is. You don't have an evaluation on him. So you've essentially bailed on him. Because while Flores is saying Tua is the quarterback and he's our guy, the amount of smoke around this story has shattered any faith the Dolphins are comfortable and confident in Tua moving forward. And it's such nonsense. He got no opportunity to build any kind of momentum in his career. And while, look, I wasn't completely sold that he was going to become this guy, he's never had the opportunity to do it. First, it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Then it was Deshaun. Then it was the injury, which is a part of his story. And now it's Deshaun again. And all I could hear about last year is how you're building like this winning culture and you have all these standards. Like, no, you don't. No, you don't. You're willing to risk all of it. And I haven't even mentioned, I'm just talking about on the field. I have not even mentioned what kind of reaction you're going to get from a PR standpoint. Now, there's a certain amount of people who I'm going to lose with that conversation because they don't like cancel culture and they need, you know, evidence and proof and like, you know, that whole conversation, which is fair to have. But regardless, there's still going to be a reaction. There's still going to be blowback for making this move, especially right now when you don't have the answers. You don't know what happens. What's going to happen? Is he going to be available? You have no idea. It is wild to me that there is even a conversation about trading for him. It's not about the winning games part. I get it. People want to win games. People want to keep their jobs. I understand that. But if he's not available, it doesn't matter. That doesn't solve your problem. You're not going to win games. Now you've traded away players. Now you've traded away draft picks. And you don't have the guy that's supposed to come in and win you games. So how is this even a solution? It makes absolutely no sense to me. And it is outrageous how Tua's career has been handled up until this point. So we'll talk about this a little later with Amy Dash, and she'll have some more answers on, hopefully, on the pick situation and how all that works, but also what's going on with all the cases and where the situation actually stands with Deshaun Watson. But let's talk to Kimmy Checks of NFL Network on the other side. But first, let's check in with David Gascon for what's trending.
Man, Joy, it's you started the show with fire. And now,
fired up. Fired up, David.
Now, you know, as fired up as you are right now about this situation, I was last week with that Iowa defeat. It was so good.
Why are you picking on Sam?
You know what, Joy? You know what, Joy? It's like having a pizza with like pepperoni and sausage and Canadian bacon and meatballs and just tab of cheese. It was,
you know what I think, Dave?
So
when
good.
I see the Broncos offense,
it
I see Iowa's
so
offense.
So good. Yeah, slow. Just slow.
Slow at every touchdown's
slow,
a blessing.
Incompetent and losing to bad teams. Anyways, I digress. You guys had mentioned, obviously, Oklahoma and Kansas moments ago, so here we are.
Williams, they run into each other, throws in zone. Hazelwood caught it. It's a touchdown. Jaden Hazelwood. He had three last week, and the Sooners are finally in the end zone in Lawrence. A play that looked awkward, but it worked out.
Game has looked awkward. Oklahoma right now is their first touchdown of the game. Caleb Williams threw a touchdown pass. He's got two of them now in an INT, 131 yards. But it's Kansas leading right now, 17-14 over third-ranked Oklahoma. Devin Neal for Kansas, 21 carries, 101 yards, and also a pair of scores. Number two, Cincinnati at the end of three quarters of play, leading Navy 27-10. Northwestern unranked and getting beat right now by Michigan on Fox. 24-7 is a score in that affair. 4.5 minutes to play in the third quarter. Penn State, seventh ranked in the nation at 5-1. They lead Illinois in an ugly affair. 10-7 is a count. Sean Clifford, 138 yards and a touchdown in that contest. And 16th ranked Wake Forest, 49-35 over Army. Sam Hartman, 18-23 for 407 yards and four touchdowns. Joy, back to you.
Thank you, David. Yeah, I was a little fired up on that Deshaun take, but it is what it is. I got a lot to say. I got a lot of thoughts. Let's check in with Kimmy Checks of NFL Network, also on Prime Video, Thursday Night Football. She does the broadcast on there as well, another alternative broadcast on Prime Video as well as NFL Network. Kimmy, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, Kimmy is from Kansas City. And the Chiefs. The Chiefs.
Don't start talking about my defense now.
All right. Well, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to ask you. Because, look, I think that people are getting a little crazy with the doubt of Kansas City. But I don't know that it's necessarily directed at Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in the offense. I think it's the defense. And it's probably a little fair to have some questions about it. But they did do a nice job last week. Is it just they're taking a couple games to get things flowing? Or what do you think is going on with the defense?
Well, first of all, it's so funny how Patrick Mahomes throws a few interceptions, and now the entire storyline is, has the NFL figured out Patrick Mahomes and this Andy Reid offense? The answer to that is still no, and Patrick Mahomes still is the incredible quarterback we're seeing, but we're seeing Patrick make these mistakes this season because of the Kansas City defense, right? We get in these situations where we understand that Mahomes can score on nearly every single drive if he wants to. But there's added pressure on him because of all that's happening on the defensive side of the ball. And we think about the Dallas defense last season and the fact that Dak Prescott was on pace to shatter every single record prior to getting injured. It was because he was in these must-win situations. And that's exactly what's happening with Kansas City. So I think they're just kind of working through the kinks. I think they've also been incredibly lucky to have such good seasons back-to-back and make it to the Super Bowl. But now they're getting this reality check that it's not just on Patrick Mahomes to be the guy that can get the team to win. The defense also needs to step up. So, I don't know, I'm rooting for them, but if you look at the AFC West this season, there are other competitors, and Kansas City kind of needs to be aware of that.
Well, that's why I think that this game this week is a massive game for them, because Chiefs-Titans, it's in Tennessee. They struggled in the first half against Washington, but obviously we know how the end of that game went. And Derrick Henry is unbelievable. He is on record pace this year. And, you know, the Titans are a tough team. So they've put together some big wins this year. So I think that this is a really important game for the Chiefs.
I mean, it's huge. And I think that the Titans probably feel really good seeing what they did at home against the Bills on Monday Night Football. Yes, there's a little bit of coaching controversy on that call to go for it on fourth down. But regardless, the Titans got that win, right? And this offense quite literally runs through Derrick Henry. There's so much hype about A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. But this season, especially because of the injuries with those guys, it has been Derrick Henry who's had to put the team quite literally on his back. So I think this will be a good test. I think that the Kansas City, you know, run defense is atrocious. But also being aware that, you know, as much as I love the Titans, I think they could see a reality check this week against Kansas City, because KC's going to come in hot and they're going to come in very motivated to get that win on the road.
So speaking of Derrick Henry, he might be my favorite player in the league. I just love watching him. He's just a phenomenon. Should we be considering him more for MVP? Like he's had some MVP conversations throughout the past couple years, but this year he is on record pace. I mean, he is on pace to break the all-time record for carries in a season, the record for yards in a season, the record for touches in a season, the record for yard for scrimmage in a season if he keeps on the pace that he is on now. Should we have a more serious conversation about him as the MVP?
Absolutely. The fact that he's not the front runner right now for the MVP race is beyond me. And also understanding that historically, running backs don't win the MVP spot, right? It's most likely a quarterback, and, you know, Kyler Murray's playing well this season. So there are some other guys who could be in that conversation. But the big thing with Derrick Henry, and I think the only concern anyone's had, and the reason I don't think he gets enough respect, is every single season this conversation starts, mostly during the preseason, will we see regression from Derrick Henry?
Right.
He can't continue at the pace that he's continuing on. And every single season, he's exceeded those expectations. But the reality is, at some point, there will be regression. So why not, you know, give the man the credit while he's going hot? I think he's absolutely an MVP.
Your partner on Prime Video on Thursday Night Football, Hawk, tweeted that he runs like Forrest Gump, and I can't get it out of my brain now.
He does.
He's so because
his, his hands are up and down. He's straight up Forrest Gump.
Did you run track?
Yeah, I did in high school.
So yeah, so he just like is the definition of pick him up, put him down. Like he just is so straight up and down. And that's why I really feel like the only way to stop him is to get him at the line of scrimmage, because once he gets out in the open outside the lines, he is gone. And he's just a refrigerator downhill. And like that is there's like a list of things I would never want to do as an athlete.
And is it like, go up against Derrick Henry?
Yeah, I don't want to try and tackle Derrick Henry straight on. I don't want to have to try and line up against Jonathan Ogden and try and move him. Like, there's just certain things I have no interest in participating in if I'm an athlete, and that's definitely one of those things. We're talking to Kimmy Checks of NFL Network and Thursday Night Football Prime Video. So the Browns and the Broncos played on Thursday night. It wasn't the most thrilling of games, but it was a very important game for both of those organizations, and the Browns getting the win, kind of the way they got their wins. Ernest Johnson has the game he has, and now the conversation has heated up. I mean, it's been boiling for a while about what the Browns should do with Baker Mayfield. Now, personally, I think it's crazy to talk about moving off of Baker Mayfield. Not because I think that Baker Mayfield is, you know, at the level of Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. But the Browns have been terrible for forever, and he finally stabilized that organization. Now, I think Kevin Stefanski deserves a lot of credit. I think Andrew Berry, their GM, deserves a lot of credit. But Baker's got to get some credit, too. He is the one on the field carrying out that game plan. They aren't winning in spite of Baker Mayfield. So while I don't think he should get a $40 million a year contract, I do think they should work it out with Baker Mayfield. Your thoughts?
I mean, I agree, but even looking at Thursday Night Football, which I know we both cover that game for Amazon Prime Video and Twitch Sports, you know, Case Keenum stepped up and did what was asked of him, and it's the same thing that they asked of Baker Mayfield. Understanding that the Browns' offense, it's a run-heavy offense, right? That's why it was so critical to get D'Ernest Johnson and Demetri Felton into the game with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt out. They're averaging the most rush attempts per game in the league. So there's not as much pressure on Baker Mayfield to make these huge offensive plays through the air, knowing that it's a run-heavy offense. It's kind of like you don't need to broke what's not broken, right? You don't need to fix what's not broken. And Baker Mayfield in this offense isn't broken. Like you said, does he deserve $40 million a year? Probably not. Can I throw a football the way Baker Mayfield can throw a football? Probably not. But I do agree that Baker is fine for this offense, and he's winning games. He's making them actual AFC contenders, and they're going to be a consistent team the next few years if they keep the pieces that are still there to go to the playoffs.
Well, right. So that's the conversation, is that the roster around Baker Mayfield is able to be there because of what they pay him, and that roster is what elevates Baker Mayfield. And all of those things can be true, and I understand that it really comes down to the money, but there is also the conversation, as you just mentioned, Case Keenum did what was asked of him. Yeah, but he did it against Denver, which we now know is not a good team. So Baker Mayfield, we agree, is better than Case Keenum. That's why he's the starter. And there's a question that DJ and Bucky Brooks, my partners on Prime Video and Twitch Sports on Thursday nights, have about quarterbacks. Is he a confetti guy? Can you win a championship with him? Could you see him at the end of the year, the Super Bowl, holding the trophy with the confetti falling down? Now, you probably wouldn't call Nick Foles a confetti guy, but he got it done, right? So, like, is he somebody you could win a Super Bowl with, or is there no question in your mind that's not going to happen no matter how many good pieces we put around him? So that is my question with Baker Mayfield. I feel like he is, so then it just comes down to the money. Because what are your options here? Like, what else are you going to do? You're too good to get a draft pick.
Right. But okay, so the question here with Baker Mayfield, is he a confetti guy? The Browns have to win big against other good teams. Like we said, they did what needed to be done despite the injuries on Thursday Night Football. As you so eloquently pointed out, the Broncos team, not that great this season, though they started 3-0 and red hot against teams that are also not great this season. But I need the Browns to actually be able to compete and win these games. I know it was a close game with Kansas City earlier this season, but they still lost that game. Like, they need to have some solid wins against teams with winning records before we can continue this conversation of Baker Mayfield being a confetti guy and then get down to the nitty-gritty of what he should be played. So I need them to win against these must-win teams and these must-win situations before I can really rationalize if he can continue on with the Cleveland Browns and if they can actually move past just the playoffs, but into hoisting a Lombardi trophy.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll discuss this more on the other side. We're talking to Kimmy Checks of NFL Network and Amazon Prime Video, Twitch Sports NFL Next Live with Andrew Hawkins and Chris Long. So you can catch her on Thursday nights as well. All right, last question before we get you out of here. And thank you for joining us today on the Joy Taylor Show. The Rams and Lions are going to play this weekend. The Rams are favored by, 16 points. So no one's anticipating a close game. But this is obviously the story of Jared Goff coming back to LA, and Sean McVay talked about how, you know, he regrets how he handled things with Jared Goff. Jared Goff said he didn't hear from the Rams or Sean McVay until from the season end till when he found out he was traded. I tend to be more empathetic towards players in these situations. Obviously, Jared's not playing well with the Lions. Matthew is playing incredible with the Rams. But what do you think about that situation? Like, do you feel like they handled that wrong? Sean McVay said he regrets how he handled it.
Absolutely. And I think it was disrespectful, because you forget that Jared Goff took them to a Super Bowl. They didn't win, but he still got them to the Super Bowl. And there was still a lot of support around Jared Goff. And I think the timing of when it happened and all that happened right before the draft this last season, like, it just seemed disrespectful and, quite frankly, dismissive of the guy that Jared Goff was. Regardless of if he was not doing what needed to be done for that team at that time, and that's why they wanted to trade him away, there was no empathy. There was no, like, parting messages that still supported his move to the Lions. And I think, you know, for Sean McVay being a coach that so many players believe in, I would have hoped that he would have been a player's guy and a player's coach in that moment and give Jared Goff the due respect that he earned being a part of that team for a few years before getting traded. So I know that the Rams will win, right? I'm not going to dispute that for this weekend, for Sunday at SoFi Stadium. However, I want Jared Goff to come out there and play his butt off. I want him to then get the respect he needs, because now the storyline is, well, Jared Goff is 0-6 when he's not coached by Sean McVay. I want Dan Campbell and I want Jared Goff to get this moment and this recognition on Sunday, so then we can put a little bit more respect on Goff's name.
I really am. I'm rooting for Dan now. After listen, a grown man starts crying. I can't handle myself. I immediately start
full
crying.
Puddle,
so,
full yeah. puddle.
Full puddle. I'm a Capricorn. I don't cry about anything. But, like, as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh no, Dan, don't put me through this. I'm rooting for him. I agree. I think they could have had a conversation with him at least. But thank you so much for joining us, Kimmy. Again, check out Kimmy on NFL Network. Follow her on social media at Kimmy Checks, KIMMICHEX. Follow her and check her out on Thursday nights on Amazon Prime Video and Twitch Sports on NFL Next Live. Thank you so much for joining us, Kimmy. Have a great day.
You are the best guy. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that Browns-Baker situation. I have some thoughts. I don't think the Browns should panic. We talked a little bit about it there, and I will elaborate on the Joy Taylor Show on the other side.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Thank you to Kimmy Checks for joining us of NFL Network and Amazon Prime Video and Twitch Sports. We'll talk to Amy Dash, legal analyst for Fox Sports, CBS Sports, and Odyssey about the Deshaun Watson situation. I gave my thoughts on that earlier today. Fired up. Very, very frustrating situation. But Baker Mayfield and the Browns played on Thursday nights against the Broncos, who we know are not a great team. And the conversation about what to do with Baker in Cleveland has really begun to heat up. How much do you pay him? Do you give him an extension? Do you, you know, consider all options at the end of the year? And despite what Baker may think, because he made me the first face that he saw that you would see on his annual hater video. Did you see that, Sam?
No, I did not.
I have done nothing but defend Baker his entire career. Again, you know how I am about rookies starting. I was like, Baker should start week one. And, like, this year, my face is the first face you see when you play his hater video. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm from Pittsburgh, so I've watched Cleveland be terrible for my entire life, and for the most part, enjoyed it. But I do have a lot of respect for Cleveland Browns fans, and I love what Stefanski has done there. Andrew Berry has done an excellent job. And I think that the conversation around Baker and possibly either moving on from Baker or obviously they're not going to be able to pay him a Patrick Mahomes type of contract, but that's not what I'm talking about. I don't know how you don't see Baker as the future of the Cleveland Browns. He has stabilized an organization that has been atrocious for decades. They have not had a franchise quarterback as long as I have walked the earth, or at least as long as I can remember while being on this earth. So as long as I have had memories, they have not had a franchise quarterback. And you can say what you want about the coaching and the roster, but Baker is on the field. And he is doing that. He is the one who won the playoff game against the Steelers, which I'm not going to forget. Now, look, do I think that Baker has limitations with his talent and athleticism? Sure. But do I think that Baker could win a Super Bowl? Absolutely. With the roster pieces around him, if he's healthy, I do think that is possible. And if you don't think that's possible, I want to know what your options are. Because it sounds good. Like, everyone wants to program into the situation like, well, we're going to find a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Are you now? Is that what you're going to do? That sounds so cute. Is there like a tree or something you go to? Like, just pluck one off? That how it works? Because you've been an unstable organization forever. And I think that Baker is actually the answer for the Cleveland Browns. And if you want an example of how badly it can go, go ask the Washington football team, who moved on from Kirk Cousins, so we also think has limitations. They are 19-35 since Kirk Cousins left. So it can go badly for you really quickly. Thanks for tuning in to the Joy Taylor Show. We have an hour left. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will talk to Amy Dash about the Deshaun Watson situation. She's a legal analyst. I have lots of questions. Stick with us here on the Joy Taylor Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Good afternoon. It's Joy Taylor on the Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Thanks for hanging with us. It's a busy college football day. Some interesting games going on. So we'll keep you updated with those throughout the show, as well as get you ready for week 7 in the NFL. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover is accepted at 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. Thank you to Kimmy Checks, who joined us earlier. And now we go out to Amy Dash, CBS Sports, Fox Sports, and Odyssey legal analyst. You can follow her on social media at Amy-TV. Amy, good afternoon. Thank you so much for hanging with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Congratulations. I love the show, and I'm obviously a big fan, so I'm so thrilled to be on with you.
Thank you so much. That's so nice. Oh, I love that. Well, thank you for joining us. I follow you on social media, and you have great insight and information on all of the legally related items throughout sports, and particularly the NFL, and you have been great on the Deshaun Watson situation. And a lot of people have questions. We have lots of questions about the situation, obviously, but it kind of took a break, a little pause for a couple minutes, and now it's heated back up again with the conversation surrounding the Dolphins and Tua and a possible trade, and with the trade deadline approaching on November 2nd. And this week, things heated up with a lot of stories from local reporters in Houston talking about an imminent trade between the Dolphins that could be done as early as this week. And I don't have a lot of information. I don't know that I fully understand where things stand legally with Deshaun Watson. Now, we have no answers as far as things are going to go with the NFL. So I guess let's just start with where is the ship? Like, does everything stand legally with Deshaun Watson? I guess start with civilly first.
Well, civilly, there's over 20 different civil lawsuits, and so that could go on for more than a year. It could actually go on for 2 full seasons, maybe even longer, because depositions are going to start, from what I'm hearing, they were supposed to start in September. Now I'm hearing they're doing the schedule now. They could start this month, next month with the women, but of course there's so many women to be deposed that that's going to be a process in and of itself, and then they probably won't get to Deshaun till February. And then this probably wouldn't get into a courtroom for at least a year. And then you have to go through that process, and then there might be an appeal. What usually happens with these types of civil suits is that there are settlements right before trial. So let's say in the worst case scenario, you slog through all of these civil lawsuits and then he ends up settling them, even though, I mean, there's a lot of women to settle with, so maybe it's less likely in this scenario. But if he settles it, then as we've seen with other cases in the NFL, it might just go away, because if there's no finding of wrongful conduct by a jury and it's quieted, even if it's quieted a year and a half from now, then there may not even be a suspension. But of course, the NFL is doing this own, their own parallel investigation, so we would have to wait for the findings with that. But I think on the criminal side, it's obviously a lot more serious. There is confirmation of an FBI investigation, so that's at the federal level. Plus, you have an ongoing investigation. According to the police department, there were at least 10 complaints at the state level. So you've got two potential criminal investigations and then over 20 civil lawsuits. So to me, I just don't see how he's playing traded or not, period, in the near future.
Right. So, okay, so that's a lot to process. So let's start with the civil cases and how long that could take and what that means. So is it legally, if he did settle those cases, so let's just separate the two issues and let's just talk sure. about the civil side. So if he were to settle those cases, is that going to be like a class action settlement, or is he going to settle with each individual woman? Like, how is that being presented?
Right now, all of the discovery is being done together, but each trial would be separate.
So he would go to a civil trial with each individual woman?
Exactly. That's the way that it's set up right now.
Okay. Now, the criminal side of it, the NFL is doing their investigation, but from what I understand, so maybe you know this, the other side of this, from what I understand, the NFL's investigation is not interfering with the criminal investigation. So there are limitations to what the NFL is able to fully investigate right now because the criminal investigation is still going on?
Exactly. So don't expect any findings from the NFL until there is either a charge at the criminal level or the police have wrapped up their investigation, and then also the federal agents have wrapped up their investigation. The NFL is not going to make its own determination before that happens.
And what particularly is the federal investigation regarding?
Well, that's what we're wondering. I mean, it's very quiet. So the FBI has a policy that they will never comment or not comment on something. So they won't even confirm the existence of it.
Okay.
But we know that it does exist because Deshaun Watson's own attorney said that there is some sort of investigation, but there's an argument over what it's about. So Tony Busby, who represents a lot of the plaintiffs, is saying that the investigation is into Deshaun Watson and his conduct. And Deshaun Watson's attorney is saying, no, the investigation is into a woman who is one of the women that filed a suit against Deshaun, potentially trying to extort money from him.
Okay, so we don't have a confirmation on what that investigation even is related
exactly.
to. We know that it is because the lawyers have confirmed it. The FBI hasn't, but the lawyers have. And we don't even know if he's the one being investigated or if it's one of the women.
Right.
Okay. And then the state level, we're talking to Amy Dash. You can follow her on social media at Amy Dash TV. And then the state level, do you know what that investigation is?
There were 10 police complaints filed. So those complaints have to be investigated. So there are 10 separate allegations that would need to be investigated. And last we heard on that front, there was a grand jury that was issuing subpoenas, but that was a rumor. We don't even know if that's true. So normally the way it would happen is the police would investigate first. When they wrap that up, they would give their findings over to a grand jury to make a determination on whether there should be formal charges or not. The rumors were that it's now at the grand jury stage, which if that's true, we could either have charges or not, depending on what the grand jury decides, any day.
So there's just a lot of unknown around the situation. So what I like to do in these scenarios, because now we are talking about a potential trade and the Dolphins being the main partner that has been listed as a trade partner with the Texans. And Deshaun has asked for a trade and isn't playing for the Texans right now. So the Deshaun Watson trade was going to happen whether these cases came to light or not. It was just a matter of how and when. But I like to look at best case scenario and worst case scenario. So what is the best case scenario, I guess, as far as Deshaun's situation goes? Because you can't say a blanket statement of the best case scenario. Like, if I'm a team, the Dolphins, and I'm going to trade for Deshaun Watson, what is the best case scenario that comes out of this situation for Deshaun and the Dolphins?
So, well, first of all, let me just say that when he requested his trade at the end of January 2021, he had already been contacted by at least one, possibly two, of these women's representatives asking for money. So at least one of them had asked for $30,000. So that preceded, that was in mid-January. He asked for the trade at the end of January. So some people who were saying, oh, well, he wanted to be traded, and because he wanted to be traded, the Texans had this conspiracy to get back at him for that. No, it was actually the other way around. It may have been motivated by him knowing that things were coming down the pipeline and he wanted to get out of there. Now, the best case scenario for him in terms of the Dolphins is that, well, right now he's eligible to play, right? The Texans are choosing not to play him.
Right.
So the Dolphins would just play him and they'd say, well, we really hope, forget about the civil stuff. I'm not concerned about that. That's going to take forever. You could get one or two seasons out of him. The NFL is not going to conclude their investigation, as we established, until the police are done at the local and federal level. So they're going to have to pray every single day that something doesn't drop. Now, normally what happens in high-profile cases is if there's going to be any type of charge, especially at the federal level with the FBI, they will wait for the most inopportune time to do it to make a splash. Right. And like they did with the NCAA bribery charges, they'll come in, they'll do a huge press conference with some corny headline, and they'll say things like, we've got your playbook, and they'll have like big cutout cardboard, pictures of footballs and faces, and they make a whole thing out of it. It's a big publicity stunt when charges are filed. So they would do something like that, especially at the federal level, maybe right after the trade deadline. Or right before the trade deadline, or right before the Super Bowl. That's usually how it goes. The police are a little bit less calculating with that at the local level. So really, charges could drop any day, if at all, at the local level. So if you're the Dolphins, you're like, well, we're just going to see how many games we can get out of him. But then you have to take into account the fact that the Texans aren't playing him for a reason. Do you think that you're just going to trade him? And yes, all of the hype around this has died down for the time being until he's traded to the Dolphins, and then all of a sudden the media tide turns and everybody starts going, oh my gosh, the Dolphins are really going to play this guy? Can you believe it? Now, whether he's guilty or innocent, and obviously he's now innocent until proven guilty, there's still going to be that public pressure on the team of like, are you really going to play him right now when all these women have come out with these allegations?
Yeah, I mean, that's so you kind of answered my second half of my question, which is what's the worst case scenario? And that's it. I mean, yeah, I said this earlier. That's why I cannot understand how this is even a conversation about a possible trade, because there is so much unknown and you have to evaluate the risk in these situations and the risk reward when you're talking about what the worst case scenario that's on the board. You have to examine all options, all things that could possibly happen. And on the board is this all goes away and he plays and he never gets suspended. And, you know, it's a story for a little while and then it goes away and you can deal with it because you're winning. Worst case scenario is an absolute apocalyptic disaster for the Dolphins and for the NFL, for that matter, because this trade was allowed to happen. So I don't know if you have the answer to this, but this is my last question regarding it. Because there is a talk about a trade happening and we don't know what the NFL is going to do as far as their suspension goes. And again, the NFL does not have to have hardcore evidence. They do not have to have a criminal charge. They don't have to have anything. They just have to, like, it just has to be in the determination of the NFL that it is conduct detrimental to the NFL to be suspended. So they don't have the burden of proof that legally or even civilly you need to have a case go through. So the NFL could still choose to suspend him at some point. But is there a way for, if the Dolphins do make this trade, to have guarantees against these picks or players if as soon as he gets to Miami, as you said, they're like, oh, nope, can't play, suspended, charges filed, and he's not going to play for the next 3 years?
Yeah, I think they just release him. So that's why, from a business perspective, if you're not at all taking into account the look of it, from a business perspective, but I think that's a very narrow and naive way to look at it, because there's going to be public pressure.
Oh, yeah, no, that's, you can't look at it that way at all. But it seems as if they are, because they are completely ignoring the public perspective of this in even having the conversation about the trade. So go on.
Right. So you just cut him. So if you're that naive and you're going to look at it as, oh, well, let's just look at the numbers, then you bring him in. The second he gets charged, you cut him because there's a morals clause in the contract.
But what do you do about the picks that you sent?
Oh, yeah, forget it. Then you're at, yeah, of course, absolutely. And then you've pissed off your quarterback, right?
Well, that's done. Like, the trade talk around Tua, like, it's already done. They've dented that in this ever even becoming a story, which is, again, why I feel so strongly about how badly this has been handled, because you have a young quarterback that you needed to be developing. And then the moment that this conversation came up, it completely devalued him and put him in this space where not only does the rest of the team not know what's going on, the fan base doesn't know what's going on, the public perception from the media and the rest of the NFL, nobody knows what you're doing at the quarterback position, because you keep this story continues to exist. And if it wasn't a story, because everyone's saying, oh, it's coming from Houston. Like, if it wasn't a story, they wouldn't have anything to talk about. So, like, yeah, there's not, I like, mean, they're just making up that they're having these conversations.
Quarterbacks, right?
Right. Right.
So it doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, if it were me, if I was making that decision, if I was Houston, I'd be trying to get rid of him. And if I was every other team in the NFL, just generally speaking, I'm not saying he's guilty or not. I'm just saying, because of all the complicating factors and the unknowns, I wouldn't touch him.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I don't know what happened or didn't happen, and that's not what we're discussing. What we were discussing is actual reality, and that is the cases and the criminal investigations and the possibility of him not being able to play. And that's why the risk reward to me is just astronomical. Like, you could literally give up that many picks and players, and a day later charges come down and you've lost everything. And I don't understand how that risk is worth it. Well, thank you,
exactly.
Amy. You were spectacular.
Thank you so much.
Great information.
I really appreciate it.
Really appreciate you stopping by today. You can follow Amy Dash on social media at Amy Dash TV. She is excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today, Amy.
Thanks, Joy. Take care.
Thanks. Wow, that's a lot. That is a lot to process. Okay, so maybe we will we'll recap a little bit of that and get a little teaser on a sleeper for MVP. I mentioned him earlier. You might know who I'm talking about. But he could just sneak in at the end. There's often conversation about him, but we'll recap that and talk a little bit about that sleeper MVP. Thank you so much to Amy Dash for joining us. And we'll also talk to Siret Sohi from The Ringer. And there's lots of NBA conversations and lots of stories going on right now. Lakers lost again last night, so we'll talk about that with her on The Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back, Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Thank you to Amy Dash, legal analyst. You can follow her on social media at Amy Dash TV. She was amazing. A lot of insight on the Deshaun Watson situation. We'll talk to Siret Sohi of The Ringer. The NBA has begun, and this league, boy, drama. I love it. It's my favorite reality television show. I'm not a huge reality TV person. I miss the days of the true trash reality TV. I was a big Flavor of Love person, Rock of Love, I Love New York. Those are my shows.
Yeah, boy!
Exactly. You could not write that kind of shenanigans if your life depended on it.
The NFL is real, though. Like, reality TV shows are mostly staged with, like, some interaction that's natural.
Don't ruin it for me, Sam!
I'm sorry. You can still go back and watch your favorite.
I'm completely with you, Joy. I loved those shows.
Allow me to exist in this fantasy where people that crazy behave that way.
Rock of Love?
Oh, man. I mean,
that one was
I don't want to get on too much of a tangent, but those shows were masterpieces. Masterpieces. I don't know if you were a Flavor of Love person, but the scene where Delicious is sitting with Flavor Flav at the dinner table. I can't remember the other girl's name because it wasn't important. She was singing. The other girl was singing for Flavor Flav. Do you remember this scene? I don't know if you know this.
I watched that show. It's
a great YouTube clip. Like, if you have 3 seconds of your day,
okay.
And you've got nothing going on, you're sitting in an Uber later and you want to laugh really hard. It's just the Flavor Flav Delicious singing clip. It will come up immediately. It probably has like 10 million views. And the girl is sitting there singing for Flavor Flav, and she sounds like me, like not a great singer. Good effort, not a great singer. And Delicious is sitting there, and she is so bothered that this woman would have the audacity to sing in front of her. And Flav is like, that's nice, and he asks Delicious to sing, and she has the voice of an angel. And I'm not going to ruin it for you, but it's one of my favorite scenes. I think it's probably the best moment in television history, and I don't think I'm being dramatic here. But I miss those days. But the NBA has that level of drama. And it's why, I mean, obviously, there are incredible players. The future of the NBA is great. It's unbelievable young players. LaMelo Ball is playing incredible, which is not a shock to me because I was on LaMelo Ball from the beginning, back in the JBA days. It's one of the things I've been most right about in my career. I'm going to remind everyone every time his name comes up. But he's playing great, and there's a lot of really exciting basketball happening in the NBA right now, but there's also a lot of drama. So we will talk to Sirit from The Ringer about that in about 5 minutes. But I got to talk about what Amy just said, because the Deshaun Watson situation is everywhere and the possible trade with Miami. And she really just broke it down from a legal perspective, how all of it would work and what is on the table as far as options for the Dolphins and what the worst case scenario for that trade and that situation could be. And it's what I said earlier. I don't understand how, with all of the unknowns, and again, no one's accusing anyone of anything, but you have to examine what is happening. It's not about what I think he did or didn't do or what anyone does. It's what is happening as far as the investigation. Because we have so many unknowns, making that trade is such a colossal risk. Take the PR part out of it, which is an inevitable thing that's going to happen, which is very important and significant. So it's difficult to separate from that because it's 100% going to happen, and that they're clearly willing to deal with the backlash of that. But take that out of it. At any moment, the hammer could come down and he can't play and you lose those picks. Like, it's gone. Poof. I don't know how you can work in some protections for that. But from what Amy just said, like, that's just, it is what it is. And they could cut him, but you're still not going to get back what you gave up in a trade for him. It's not like you're signing him in free agency. So it's just a wild, wild conversation to be having with all of the unknowns and the possibilities and the risk that you're taking. And of course, now you've completely devalued Tua, and the confidence about him being the quarterback moving forward is completely gone. So if you missed that, we will post the podcast after the show. Follow me on social media at Joy Taylor Talks, and I will tweet that out and post it on Instagram and Facebook as well, depending on what your social media platform of choice is. And you gotta listen to Amy because she had some really, really good stuff on the Deshaun Watson situation. We'll talk to Sirit Sohi in a second about the NBA news and drama coming up, but I gotta talk about my guy Derrick Henry. I love Derrick Henry. He is my favorite. But aside from him being my favorite, I don't know. We have this conversation about him, like, being in the MVP mix every year, and like, we've had some running backs win the MVP, obviously, but what he's doing is really, really spectacular. This season, he has 162 yards for 162 carries for 783 yards. It's week 7. 16 catches for 138 yards and 10 rushing touchdowns. So he's on pace to finish the season with 459 carries for 2,219 yards and 2,610 yards from scrimmage, 28 rushing touchdowns. So if he finishes at the pace that he's going right now, he would break 4 different NFL records, and not just any old records, some serious records. All-time record for carries in a season, which was set by Larry Johnson in 2006. The record for yards in the season, set by Eric Dickerson, LA legend, in 1984. Record for touches in a season, set by James Wilder in 1984. And the record for yards from scrimmage in a season, set by Chris Johnson in 2009. So these are some serious records that we're talking about breaking. And he's going up against the Chiefs defense this weekend, who ranks 28th in scoring defense, 28th in total defense, 25th in pass defense, and 27th in rush defense. So they better bring it. But I think he really needs to be considered and talked about as not just in the MVP, like one of the top players in the league. Like, when we mention it, we always bring up the quarterbacks. Like, Derrick Henry needs to get a little more love. And I think everyone respects Derrick Henry, and maybe it's because he was with Tennessee and they're not the flashiest of organizations, but he needs to be talked about in that conversation as one of the best players in the league, in the way that we do with Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett and all of the top quarterbacks. Chiefs, Tennessee Titans this weekend is one of my favorite five, and I think it's the biggest matchup this weekend. But I'm so interested to see what Derrick Henry does against this Chiefs defense. So we'll talk to Sirit Sohi. NBA news. She is from The Ringer. Got to ask about the Lakers last night, the Ben Simmons situation, and some other stuff around the NBA. But first, let's get to David Gascon with what's trending.
Joy, no upsets the top five of college football, unlike last weekend. So it's good news. Number two, Cincinnati held serve against Navy, 27-20. Oklahoma was shut out in the first half by Kansas. They scored 35 in the second half to defeat the Jayhawks, 35-23. Kennedy Brooks had himself a good day at the office, 24 carries, 79 yards with two touchdowns of his own. Michigan just prevailed over Northwestern, 33-7. Michigan's sixth ranked in the nation. I don't know if they'll move up at all. Penn State is in a dogfight. They're now going to overtime with Illinois. 10-10 is the score. Illinois 2-5 this season. Number 16, Wake Forest, threw up 70 so far on Army. 70-49 is the score. There's a minute 48 to play in the fourth quarter in this contest. Arkansas won earlier today, so did Florida State. Kansas State came from behind a blank Texas Tech in the second half and beat them. 25-24 was the final. Wildcats have now won six straight over the Red Raiders. That is it for now. Obviously, getting geared up for a couple of interesting games. Pitt and Clemson right now around the corner. Clemson opened up the year was a double-digit favorite against Pitt, and now they're three-point dogs in this contest. Kind of wild. Kind of wild. Joy, are you a baseball fan?
I am.
Big, small, in the middle?
In the middle.
In the middle.
Yeah.
I don't know. Walker Buehler throwing tonight for the Dodgers instead of Max Scherzer. He got a dead arm, he said. So
yeah. Look, Dodgers not going down without a fight.
That's right.
It's been a very interesting postseason for the Dodgers, but
this is wild because you don't win your division, so then you can't set up your rotation.
Yeah,
and then everything else just kind of falls apart. Muncy on the last day, busted elbow. Justin Turner's gone. Ryan Bershinger is just pissed off with the world because of all of it. So
yeah, the injuries have been tough, but yes. That's why you get paid the big bucks.
That's right. That's right. Back to you, Joy.
Thank you, David Gascon, with the updates. Listening to the Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio, brought to you by one of our favorite cities, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Plan your trip today at visitlasvegas.com. We are trying to reach Sirit to talk about the NBA and the news going on right now around the league. Obviously, the Lakers struggling to start the season, which I anticipated. I don't get crazy about LeBron teams with a bunch of new players or if he moves to a new place. History tells you that it takes a little time for things to get going when he is in a situation that is relatively new. And while obviously him being with the Lakers isn't new, this roster has a lot of pieces that are going to take some time to gel together. I know there was an incident on the sideline with Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard. Also not going to get crazy about it. I mean, it's obviously very rare to see. But look, this is a roster full of veterans. It's the oldest roster in the NBA. There's a lot of things that need to be adjusted. They're not young players that are just going to be moved into different positions and roles and everything's just going to gel right away. I still have the Lakers going to the NBA Finals. Lakers-Nets, I know I'm so edgy. But I have faith in the biggest stars and in LeBron James. I'm not doubting LeBron James, no. That's not the move that I make. All right, so we're having trouble reaching Sierra, but we're just going to discuss the Ben Simmons situation anyway because I haven't gotten to it yet today. So I was saving it for her, but we can talk about it now. I'm not worried about the Lakers. I know everyone's going to freak out and that's going to be a big conversation, but I'm not concerned. And I wasn't concerned about the preseason either because the preseason means nothing. So the Lakers have lost their first two games. They're going to be fine. I'm not concerned about it. Now, the Ben Simmons situation is very interesting. So we're now at a place where it's come like full circle. First, it was everyone and everyone in Philadelphia is mad at Ben Simmons. Doc Rivers is talking about him after the series with the Hawks, where they lose. Joel Embiid is out on him. He wants out, and he's not talking to anyone. Then they try and go out in on a plane. The team does to go talk to him. He doesn't want them to come. His house is up for sale now. He doesn't want to show up, and then they fine him, and then he does show up, and he's not involved, and he's got the phone in his pocket, and then he gets kicked out of practice, and then and then he gets kicked out of practice again. And now Joel Embiid is saying he doesn't care. And Joel Embiid is talking about, we do everything for him. I'm worried about the guys that are here. And now Daryl Morey goes on the radio in Philadelphia and basically says, strap in, because we're about to ride this drama train for as long as we need to. Because he's saying it's his job to make sure that they are contenders, and he's not giving Ben Simmons away for a bunch of role players because they're in a position to win now, and that doesn't make sense. Now, we'll talk about Daryl Morey in a second and how I think we all got to this point with Ben Simmons in the first place. But to continue with the timeline here, Daryl Morey says that, and then Ben Simmons allegedly talks to the team and says he's not mentally ready to come back, and now you have Joel Embiid pleading with fans to be nice to everybody and like embrace everyone. So it has come full circle. Like, we're a team to breaking to a complete drama cycle, and now we're back again. That's where we are.
I was actually in Philadelphia this week visiting my sister, and people are very upset at Ben Simmons.
Okay, so this is good insight. Here we go, Iowa
fans.
Sam. Okay.
And I was listening to some of 97.5 The Fanatics with our man Anthony Gargano, who does a show right here on Saturday mornings.
And how do they feel? Because I do think that Philadelphia is one of those markets around the country, similar to LA, similar to New York, similar to Dallas, where the pulse of the fans really actually does matter. It really does influence the organization and organizations, and they pay attention to what the fans want and how they feel about things, as they should to some degree. Obviously, they shouldn't plan their, you know, rosters and things about what fans want, but how they feel about the team and the organization matters. So what is the pulse in Philadelphia? They're mad at Ben Simmons?
Yeah, I would say overwhelmingly, they're just, mad and confused. Is the guy injured? Is he mentally unprepared?
Oh yeah, I forgot. He had an injury too. Right? I forgot that in the timeline.
Does he not want to play for the team? But it's just, there's just so much going on. Like, it's just like a new issue for him every week.
So they are mad because of the issues, or are they mad because he doesn't want to be there?
Yeah, he doesn't want to be there, and then he's just like not playing right now. So, because like he got thrown out of practice because he didn't want to sub in for
a defensive drill.
A drill, but maybe he didn't want to do that because he was hurt. But it also, like, it could also be that he's just has like a bad attitude and he wants out. So I don't know what's going on there. But the fans, I talked to a couple people just on the street and are like, just start up a little conversation. They're like, what's up with Ben Simmons? I mean, they love the Sixers.
Right. No, they do.
And they are ready for another run.
Right. And so to circle back to Daryl Morey, this is why, and this isn't all on Daryl Morey. Obviously, he came there when Ben Simmons was already there. But it's been very obvious that this does not fit for quite some time. I feel like we've been having this conversation about the Sixers for like at least 2 years, maybe more. And when you have a guy like Ben Simmons, a personality like Ben Simmons, who coming out of college, the scout on him was that he becomes completely disengaged and just does not want to be involved. So he's saying mentally he's not ready and he's like dealing with things and all that's fine. And if it's true, like we all deal with things and maybe that's what's the catalyst for all of this. Joel Embiid said that he asked Ben Simmons straight up, does he want to be traded or why he wants to be traded? And he didn't give him an answer. So there are a lot of questions about what's going on with Ben Simmons. But I feel like this whole situation could have been avoidable if the Sixers weren't so hell-bent on quote-unquote winning the trade. Like, you don't have to win every trade. And you don't have to win every trade right away. Sometimes it takes 2 or 3 or 5 years to be like, oh yeah, that was actually like a really good move. We were wrong about how we reacted to that. That was actually very smart. And as a GM and an organization, you have to see around the corner. You have to look at things from a macro space. You can't be fans and media. But when everyone is saying like, hey guys, this isn't working. It's not working on the court either. It's not even about personality fit. It's not even about the energy surrounding the team. Like, it's obviously not working. It's not about holding on to stars. Like, sometimes it just doesn't work. And I feel like this was an avoidable situation from the franchise's point of view. And it's also, I think, on the organization to know your personnel. Now, I'm not excusing everything that Ben Simmons has done, because I don't think he has handled this very well, especially if he is wanting to be traded. Because if I'm another organization, why do I want to deal with everything that's happening? I don't know why this is happening. I don't know why he wants a trade. I have no answers. So I'm going to bring Ben Simmons into my organization not knowing what's going on or how we even got to this point. and I'm going to give you significant pieces, how do I know it's going to fit with my organization? So there's a lot of question marks surrounding the whole drama of it. But the Sixers, while we're saying this, are contenders. They are legitimately in a conversation to win a championship. So get the pieces, get some pieces that can help you do that. No, they're not going to be as good as Ben Simmons. Because for all this talk around Ben Simmons is an elite defender and a good distributor, and he can score when he's near the basket. Like, he's just not going to take jump shots, and he's not going to shoot free throws. We know that. What bothers me is when organizations, one, don't know their personnel, two, they get so attached to just being right about a situation that they won't move on, and three, they try to force players to do things they don't do. It's not smart. Anytime you talk to a member of a championship-winning team, no matter what sport it is, a thread throughout the conversation that you're going to have with someone from that team or a coach from that team, I always hear the same thing. We all knew our jobs. We all did our jobs. We all had a role to play. We bought into it. We believed in it. We worked hard and did a great job at what we were supposed to do. And we relied on our star to do what our star does. And that's it. And sometimes the star isn't doing it, and a role player has to step up. We see that through every championship run all the time. So if you can't get guys to buy into their role and you're constantly like, Ben Simmons, be a shooter, be a shooter. He's not a shooter, guys. That's it. It's in. The end. The end. I am not 6 feet tall. The end. I will never be 6 feet tall. I am 5 foot two. That's the story. This is my plight in life. It's not a plight. I don't mind being short.
Maybe the Sixers should call up Danny Ainge and see what he would do. I mean, he was always really good about playing, like, quote, 4D chess, right?
Oh, he will make some trades.
I mean, he just what to do with that kind of situation, because he always seemed like he won every deal.
But you don't have to win every deal.
You don't. You don't.
That's
but
the thing.
What should you do to stop the collateral damage?
Yeah, I mean, now I think it's done. Like, it's too late. You're too far in it now. And he's at the beginning of a 4-year contract, which is what Daryl's point is on the radio. Like, we can do this for a long time. You're under contract. We don't have to do anything as an organization. Now, everyone keeps comparing it to the Kyrie situation. I don't think it has. I don't think it's even remotely close to what's going on with Kyrie. Like, that's a separate entire scenario. I do think the common thread is the organization is putting their foot down in some way, but the Ben Simmons one is much more nuanced to me than Kyrie. So, yeah, I mean, it's got to be frustrating if you're a Sixers fan. We don't know what's going on with Ben Simmons. He's saying he's not, like, mentally ready to play. I mean, then he can't play. Like, if that's the answer, that doesn't solve what's going to happen this year for this season, him being on the court. It doesn't solve the trade situation. So it's kind of a stalemate. But, again, I feel like all of this could have been avoidable if you looked at the big picture of what actually works. Forget all the drama. Forget the personalities. What works on the court? And there was enough evidence that it wasn't fitting there, which is, at the end, the most important part, because that's where you win the games, not in the headlines. All right. Well, thanks again to Amy Dash and Kimmy Checks for joining us today. We will give our picks, our favorite five, and two dimes for week 7 in the NFL, and get you a quick update on all the college football games, the scores, and the ones that are still going on right now. And I have officially pulled a Colin Cowherd and got ink on my finger. I've always questioned how he does that. And
that's Big J journalism right there.
It is big.
It happens.
It is big. When you're doing Big J journalism,
pen, typewriter, there's ink involved.
On right? Your hand. I don't know how I did that, but I pulled it off. You listen to The Joy Taylor Show on Fox Sports Radio. Been a fun show today. Thank you to Amy Dash and Kimmy Checks for joining us. Thanks for hanging with us today. LSU Ole Miss playing right now. Clemson Pitt. Illinois is up on Penn State, second overtime. Let's see what's about to happen there.
And UCLA, be a bad loss.
That is going to be a bad loss. UCLA is playing Oregon right now at home. They were favored in that game. Why?
I think people are doubting Oregon a little bit. You know?
Interesting.
And UCLA has been playing better.
No, I mean, yeah, it's not. I'm not, like, disrespecting UCLA. Just, like, Oregon's ranked. So, it's a little weird. But they're playing right now, and UCLA is up 7-0 on Oregon. So, Hope you're enjoying your college football Saturday and getting ready for week 7 of the NFL, which began Thursday night with Broncos and Browns. Kimmy also does work for Amazon Prime Video. So if you want another way to watch the broadcast, you can check her out or check me out on Scouts Feed with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks Thursday nights on Prime Video. Change your audio settings to Scouts Feed, or you can watch on twitch.tv/movethesticks. And of course, check out me and Colin weekdays noon to 3 on FS1 and Fox Sports Radio. And follow Kimmy on social media at Kimmy Chex, KIMMICHEX, and Amy-TV. Amy had great stuff on Deshaun Watson. If you're confused about what's going on legally with that situation and what could be happening or what's on the table, what's available to happen, I'll post the podcast later on my social media at Joy Taylor Talks. And it's a good listen. She definitely enlightened me on some of the details legally with what's going on with Deshaun Watson. So let's quickly give my favorite picks, my favorite 5 for week 7 in the NFL. Chiefs-Titans, I think, is the biggest matchup of the weekend. Derrick Henry is on pace to break a lot of NFL records. Chiefs defense has been struggling. What will happen there? The Chiefs are favored by 4 in Tennessee, so that's a very, very interesting line. And a very interesting game to me. Bengals and Ravens, an AFC North matchup between the two best teams in that division. Joe Burrow was really right about Joe Burrow. Wouldn't have been interesting if the Dolphins were willing to give up those picks to try and trade up to get Joe Burrow from Cincinnati. Who suggested that, Iowa Sam? Did someone suggest that?
Did you?
I did suggest that. I did float that idea out there. Didn't listen to me, though. What do I know? I'm just a big mouth on the radio. Bears and Bucks. You know, I love this Justin Fields story. And Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski, I believe, are not playing, or at least questionable, for Sunday. So that line has come down. It is now 11. Let me refresh this and make sure that that's right. So I'm really interested in that game as well. Where are you? Come on. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Minus 11. Bucks. Favorite by minus 11. Eagles and Raiders. Raiders have had a tough couple of weeks. And I really like what the Eagles are putting together. Now, it's at Las Vegas. But I think that's going to be a close matchup. And then Colts Niners to finish out the day. I am very excited to see what Jimmy G looks like. If the Colts can put something together against a really good roster in San Francisco. So that leads to my 2 dimes. I like Cincinnati plus 6.5 and the Niners minus 4. That's where I'm going to try and retire with that money this weekend. No, I'm just a little fun. Thanks for hanging with us today. Thank you to Ryan, our producer, Iowa Sam, David Gascon, Kimmy Checks, Amy Dash. We're here every Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you stick around. Steve Hartman and Jeff Schwartz on Fox Sports Radio. Have a great Saturday.